Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
I thought about how lucky we are to have each other and to have such a lovely place to practice in the midst of all the turmoil and excitement of not only of Silicon Valley, but of the whole world, which is in turmoil these days. And I got to thinking about luck and the luck we have. And I got to thinking that, you know, if you are lucky, sometime in your life, you will have an experience that can reveal to you who you are and what you are. And this experience will hint at the possible direction of your life. So it could be a thought or a feeling, some activity you do, or it could be a word. Much like the story of the man who became the sixth patriarch, he was said to have had an awakening when hearing somebody recite the Diamond Sutra. He dropped everything, turned his elderly mother over to a friend, and immediately took off and joined the Sangha of the fifth patriarch. Dropped everything. So you could get lucky and have an experience like that, but if your experience is to influence or make an impact in your life, your luck needs to be accompanied by your recognition and your acknowledgement of that experience so that it can remain as a guide and so it does not evaporate like a cloud. Now, the experience or the revelation that it brings to you is not always clear, it's not always immediate. It doesn't usually grab our attention right away and does not move us to action or deeper reflection right away, as in the story of the sixth patriarch. So it may take you, us, years to realize the insight that you had and what it can open for you. But once that experience is recognized and once it is embraced, the question then is, how do you respond? How do you respond to the new knowledge? What do you do with it? One possibility is to simply note that you had this experience and then dismiss it as not being significant, not enough to do anything about. Or you could reflect on it. What does this mean? Is this experience strong enough to consider altering the course of my life? How heavily will it influence my attitude and my worldview? I had such an experience as a young boy. In 1942, I was 9 years old, growing up in a very busy New York City neighborhood. Early in 1942, the U.S. had just entered World War II. We didn't have television in those days to show us what was happening, but movie theaters showed something called newsreels, which had been around since the late 1800s. But these newsreels, which were like 10-minute short movies that you would see when you went to the movies, you would see these 10-minute newsreels. And they showed graphic films of what was going on at the war front. And the images of the death and destruction going on in Europe were frightening and confusing to everybody in early 1942. So I was just a kid at the time, but I had an adult thought. It was, why is there so much cruelty and killing? In addition to that, in my daily life, I kept noticing how people rubbed each other the wrong way. seems like they're always annoying each other, getting in each other's face in the crowded and speedy and noisy and the dirty streets of Midtown Manhattan, always pushing and shoving and threatening each other to get some kind of really small advantage, like being first in line at the grocery store or getting a seat on the subway. So I had another thought related to the first one. Why are people so mean to each other? And these questions did not go away. And where I grew up, churches and synagogues could be found in every direction within a few blocks of my street. And I came to realize that all these religions preached they all preached kindness, they all preached peace, charity, community, generosity. And they were all based on a relationship with a very powerful and external being, some deity that was felt to be able to influence lives. And when I thought about all the suffering in the world, that part of the religious vision made no sense to me. I thought, why would a benevolent, loving God allow that? So in those preteen years, I learned not to trust any religious belief system. 20 years later, I was now living and working in the paradise of Santa Clara Valley, and I was married to my dream girl. When I accidentally came across Buddhism. Look, it spoke of kindness, peace, generosity, discipline, and community, much like the religions of my youth, my earlier years. But what struck me about Buddhism, what struck me right away, was the absence of a dependency on an external deity. Buddhism's message seemed to be, there is wisdom and love here, but you have to do the work. Nobody's going to do it for you. There's no other guy. There's no guy up there going to do it for you. So I was very much impressed with what I found. The legend about Buddhism tells us that Buddhism and Zen, the practices started because a human being was touched by human suffering. Human being, a man. This man was moved by his recognition of what he saw taking place in human life. He felt something personal. He cared, and he wanted to take care. He didn't seek for simple answers to humanity's problems and to humanity's suffering. He didn't seek for easy answers that existed outside the lives and the relationships of human beings themselves. He emphasized discipline, awareness, integrity, and the development of moral character. He encouraged his followers to make a serious effort to understand the meaning of their lives and to live authentically. Last month, we had a guest speaker from Stanford, Fred Luskin, who is in charge of the Forgiveness Project, who has been involved in teaching forgiveness for maybe 20 years. He's taught it all over the world. And the Forgiveness Project, Forgiveness Program, is based on a meditation practice. So Fred has been doing meditation for 20 years or so. And he said at the end of his talk, meditation is not enough. Some of you probably remember that. He meant that by itself, it is not enough. That in order to arouse kindness, peace, generosity, and forgiveness, what we need to have is an attitude of caring and willingness to do the work of practice. We have to have the right attitude. In other words, we just can't sit there and expect wisdom to appear without our active engagement. That's what he was trying to say. If you go to Japan or Vietnam, South Korea, and you ask ordinary people or you ask Zen monks, so how did you come to Buddhism and how did you come to Zen practice? They will answer, well, it was already here. I was born into it. Now, and unlike in the Western world, there is very little diversity of churches in Asia. They all pretty much look the same. But here in the U.S. and in the U.K. and in Europe, in Latin America, we are in a discovery mode. We aren't just born into it. And our Sangha continues to be in the discovery mode of what is Buddhism and what is Zen. We are trying to understand and establish this new practice in this new ground. And it is very creative and exciting work, and it comes with a big responsibility, which we have taken on. So in addition to the role of luck in leading us to explore spiritual practice, there is a causal condition. In other words, our wake-up experience is not random. It does not come from nowhere. It can only grow out of our awareness and our sensitivity to the realities of the world we live in. In other words, it happens when we keep our spiritual radar tuned in. So we're all here today because we feel something. And this feeling has moved us. And we have come to this practice because we care. Not because some voice on high told us we should come. We come here because we care, because we feel something. We come here because we are not indifferent to the difficulties and sufferings that come with being alive. So, take it seriously, this feeling that you have and this passion that you feel. Be patient with your practice as you slowly acquire wisdom and skillful means. Make your best effort, pay attention, learn as you go. Most of all, do not let this opportunity be blown away by slight breezes of doubt. And do not be tentative or hesitant in your practice. Do not be tentative or hesitant in your practice, which only leads to sleepwalking. Go beyond saying, well, maybe I will. Yeah, I'll think about it. Go directly to yes and bring your caring nature to life. So we are lucky to have Canon Do and to be able to practice together in a loving and supportive community. So let's continue the work we've started, caring about authenticity of our own lives while we take care of each other and of everything and of everyone we meet. Thank you for being here today.
This talk was brought to you by the Canon Do Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canondo.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.